And now, the show that teaches you to take control of your own financial destiny. Traders Talk Live. Here's your host, Craig Weil.
All right, good morning. It is Saturday, May 24th, and you are listening to Traders Talk Live. I am your host, Craig Weil, and we are going to teach you some things today. We've got a great show for you. Alan Rohrbach will be stopping by later in the segment. And as lead analyst for Roar International, Alan will give us a peek at the market from a perspective most of us never see, and that's from the eyes of an institutional investor. But before we do that, I would like to welcome back Michael Young to the studio this morning.
Morning, Craig. Good to be back.
All right. I hope you had some good R&R in Tucson.
No, it was great. We got some golf in, a little break from the day-to-day by routine. It was fantastic.
Good. Well, I'm going to let our audience in a little secret as well, is that I'm going to Tucson myself. When the show is aired on Saturday, I'll probably be on maybe on the first hole. So we will not be live today. And although that may stop me from commenting on the market week, it won't stop me from opening my yap today. Because I would be very remiss in my job, Michael, if I didn't mention our housing crisis once again this morning. And if you remember back in March, I reported on legislation being rushed through the House and Senate with the intent of muting the developing mortgage and foreclosure crisis. Now, at that time, my fear was that a do-nothing Congress would stall out before reaching some sort of workable agreement. Well, I was dead wrong on that one, because Congress was able to cobble an agreement together, and it contained relief to about 500,000 beleaguered borrowers. And with the House presenting their version to the White House last week and the Senate following up on Monday, I think perhaps it may be unfortunate that our disconnected and ideologically bound president has found parts of the current legislation incompatible with a core belief of his. And he believes that the bill constitutes nothing more than a bailout of irresponsible homebuyers and has threatened a veto if certain provisions aren't met. But I think it's an insult to the American people to claim that the homebuyers themselves are to blame for the subprime crisis. And the fact is, the laundry list of culprits here starts with the White House itself and runs solidly through our Federal Reserve. And along the way, they joined hands with bankers, mortgage lenders, and Wall Street power brokers. Now, we had 240,000 new foreclosure notices last month, and the word on the street is that the crisis is deepening. So it's hard to conceive of any meaningful economic rebound or sustained market strength without this issue being resolved or softened in some way. But I guess if you can actually believe the Labor Department's April consumer price data that claimed gasoline prices fell 2% last month, past the Kool-Aid, then you'll believe that Bear Stearns needed bailing out, and the 650,000 home buyers that have undergone some stage of the foreclosure process this year are nothing more than speculators and liars and are getting their just reward. Michael, that's pretty disturbing to me.
Craig, it's unbelievable. And the more, I mean, even just being in Arizona, the more and more you go, you see projects that are just have been abandoned by developers. There's pain all over the place right now, man.
Well, you know, as I said, the show is being recorded. And as of Tuesday, the White House was softening their stance a little bit. But I don't know. We will see and we will watch that development. But certainly, the home buyers, the people that are leaving their homes in droves, they need some help here. And it's just another component of getting the economy back on track. All right, Michael, let's move to something constructive. And like you, as a floor trader for many years and faced with the reality that I needed to learn new skills in order to compete in today's electronic marketplace, you know, I recognized a long time ago that one of the crafts that I lacked most was technical analysis. And through OTA courses, fortunately, and some of the mentoring that they do, my personal technical expertise has gotten to the point where I now have days where I actually believe I'm a technical all-star. However, if I want to really make an honest comparison to some of the talent that pervades our financial landscape, I have to admit that compared to me, my guest today may be headed for the Hall of Fame. In a career that began on the floor of the CME 38 years ago, Alan Rohrbach has taken a lifetime of market experience and used it to launch the highly respected risk management consulting firm Rohr International. As its president and lead analyst, Alan is responsible for giving daily global financial analysis and commentaries to a variety of risk managers at a number of international securities firms, banks, and corporations. With his emphasis on intermarket relationships and very precise technical projections, Alan has honed his craft to become one of the leading experts on foreign exchange, international interest rate, and equity indices. A prolific writer, teacher, and speaker as well, Alan has a wealth of talent and institutional perspectives we can tap for a few moments, so I am thrilled he is here with us today. Alan, welcome to Traders Talk Live.
My pleasure to be here, Craig.
All right. Well, we are glad you're here, and I know you're taking some time out of a vacation week to be with us, so we thank you for that very much.
Well, I thank you for having me on. Well,
I just got to tell you that you would not get me off the golf course to appear on a radio show, so we are thrilled. Alan, there's a lot that I'd like our audience to learn this morning, so let's get right to it. First off, a little bit about your background, how you became in the markets, and what led you into this world of technical analysis.
Well, that's a very good question, because it wasn't necessarily what I planned to get into as I was going through my education. Frankly, I tried quite a few things, and almost by process of elimination, engineering, communications, psychology, philosophy, social science, etc., just did not appear to me to be things I wanted to stay with and do full-time. And in fact, I walked down the floor of the Mercantile Exchange as all of the brokers' children were going back to college in the fall, so there were jobs available in August of 1969, and just fell in love with the markets. One of the first things that happened the first day, and I'll say a few things during the course of this interview that I will significantly date myself.
That's okay.
As all of the ticker tape and telex machines were typing out the news that everyone was reading, all of a sudden at 9:30 a bell goes off and there's a bunch of grown men in funny colored jackets jumping up and down in this elevated platform, and I said, "What's that?"
That was me you were looking at, Alan.
It very possibly was, Michael. or your kindred spirits were in there, even if maybe a bit earlier than you. And they said, "That's pork belly trading." And I said, "Why are those people so excited?" And they go, "Well, there's a lot of money at stake based upon setting the price of pork bellies." And I said, "Oh, well, who decides the price?" They said, "That's the point. It's done by price discovery. There's no one person. It's a market function. Nobody knows for sure. The smartest people in the world who are in the business and think they know it all, they can be wrong on a given day, and a well-educated and well-disciplined public trader can beat them at their own game." Well, I was intrigued, and in fact found it to be the sort of challenge that maybe all of that previous engineering and psych and philosophy was actually preparing me for.
A lot of the traders' stories, certainly, and the people that are on the floor, they come from all different walks of life, really, all different backgrounds. And I think all of us have a similar tale to tell when we got our first taste of the markets. Was there anyone, from that first moment, was there anyone that really became influential as far as Alan Rohrbach, getting into this field, somebody that you might have leaned on a little more and cut your teeth with?
That's interesting, because you and Michael both came up through the floor, and I think one of the first things you learn is that right from the right from the first instant, there's actually quite a few people willing to share ideas, but what you learn is that they each have maybe a partial or unique perspective, and the question of how to develop a really well-rounded approach to the market means you have to listen to and discount a lot of what you hear when you first enter the business and hear opinions from people with a partial view. In terms of developing a broader view, in fact, it took a couple years' experience on the floor as a runner and phone clerk, and I finally went up to the office to be a retail commodities broker, handling retail accounts and indeed dispensing advice. And I met a gentleman by the name of Lenny Teifeld, who is a contemporary and who's still in the business. And we talked for a bit, and Lenny said, you seem to have a pretty analytical, you know, approach.
All right, Alan, hang on to that thought for 1 second. We're going to give you a chance to elaborate. You are listening to Traders Talk Live, AM 560, WIND, Chicago.
And now, let's get back to the show that will teach you how to succeed in today's turbulent financial markets. Traders Talk Live. Here to do that for you is your host, Craig Weil.
All right, thank you. We are back, and you are listening to Traders Talk Live. Michael Young, Alan Rohrbach, and Craig Weil this morning. And we're visiting with Alan, who is lead analyst and president of Rohr International, and Alan is sharing with us a little bit about his background before we get into some of the stuff he does, some of the interesting work he does in the field of technical analysis. And Alan, when we left you, you were speaking about some people who are most influential as far as your evolvement.
Right. And as I mentioned, there were really two to get past the initial confusion of a year or two of listening to various opinions from different people on the floor. When I got into the customer side of the business, a gentleman by the name of Lenny Teifeld started talking to me one day, and he said, you know, we ought to put out a special report on pork bellies. I said, okay. And he said, well, I need someone to help with the analysis of the supply-demand situation. And I was introduced to the niceties of demand elasticity and doing a proper fundamental analysis. And Lenny also introduced me to this wonderful device that, again, this is from the Stone Age. It's called the see-through ruler. It's a plastic ruler that's clear with grid lines, and how to project, do better projection than I'd been doing already on charts. So there you have both sides of it. Mike, Craig, I've got fundamental. I've got studying market momentums as technical projections. And that's really where the more organized approach developed for me. Now, the other individual is the late Marvin Osowski, who took myself and one or two other close friends under his wing, and he had an encyclopedic knowledge of technical analytic processes and started us off, you know, with bar charts, moving averages, and then as we reached the limitation of what that would provide, he introduced us to overbought, oversold indications, so on and so forth, and really helped foment what was a robust enough understanding of technical analysis that by the time Ken Shailene went on sabbatical in 1975, they asked me to teach the Mercantile Exchange's technical analysis course for a year, and that led to even more focused consideration of how it all works. When you have to teach it to other people, sometimes it really causes you to think even harder about exactly what you're doing. I know you two gentlemen have been through more than a bit of that through your OTA involvement.
Well, teaching is one thing, and of course we love that, and we do it quite often, but sticking your neck out on a daily basis, your business has evolved to the point where you have some pretty important clientele, and when you hang yourself out there, when your clients have millions of dollars at stake, takes a lot of guts, so to speak. And at what point in your evolution did you feel you could make a career out of this, leaving the teaching of it to the actual you know, making a business and having people follow your lead?
Well, that's a great question, because it actually happened in a couple of stages. And once again, sometimes you do things out of eliminating what's no longer viable. And the first thing that happened is, through all of that excellent mentoring which I received and diligently studying a lot of trends over the course of, you know, the length of trends for days and weeks certainly, but looking how things evolved over months and quarters, you develop a certain broader trend view and trend logic. And that is to say, how the market's performing relative to the fundamental news, and if the news looks bearish but the market keeps going up anyway, you start to develop a sense of that. And when short-term technical indications don't derail the dominant trend, and that was something that was quite useful for even the commodities brokerage business. However, I started to develop longer and longer-term projections, projections of where things would go over weeks and quarters primarily instead of hours and days. And that was at the same time in the late 1970s when negotiated commissions were starting to bite. So it was, well, as you're getting less and less payment for each position a client takes, and their positions are on the books for longer and longer, that, you know, there was so much interest then in the big, big swings in interest rates out of the late 70s and early 80s. I published the first Roar report in December of 1981 on an interest rate prediction, and basically said, if I'm that good at this, it's time to stop getting paid by brokerage and start getting paid for consulting.
Well, Alan, that you led me actually right into my next question, which is, you know, given that these institutions do tend to have a much longer time horizon, I can see that you do provide analysis several times a week. And why is it important that they see almost a daily report when their time horizon is much longer?
That's an excellent question, Michael, and that gets to the heart of how the institutions are always risk management oriented. It's part of what they do very well in their trading books and in their investment portfolios. And they because the positions they manage are so large, they can't be jumping out on a day-to-day basis just to trade. In fact, there's the classic example of the market makers. You know, so many of these folks have stocks, bonds, foreign exchange, where they have to have inventory available when clients come to them to buy particular products. So they have to take a longer-term position. And the reason why the shorter-term analysis helps them is that they need to know where the fine line, and that's one of the things we do well, is very accurate and exacting technical projections. They have to know where the fine line breakpoints are in certain trends to know when they want to lighten up certain positions or expand them, and it's all across the course of the bigger trend. That doesn't mean they aren't monitoring it closely.
So they're just wearing both hats, so to speak.
Of necessity.
Gotcha.
Well, it kind of ties into, we have an instructor, he's actually coming into Chicago Des Plaines to Online Trading Academy. We talked to him last week, Fernando Gonzalez. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he does this broad market analysis where they actually, you know, he's taking the different time frames and speaking to just to that point, basically, that, you know, the combination, looking at the big picture and the smaller and the medium range time frames is crucial to anyone, individuals as well as an institutional investor.
Right, and that's where you get into where a lot of folks feel that the institutional money managers have some real advantages. You know, and there are a whole range of areas where they might have an advantage, and one of them is an integrated intermarket view. And they're using... And I heard the brief interview of Fernando at the end of your show last week, and he was very pointed about using multiple technical indicators across multiple time frames and looking at how different markets are impacting each other. And I'd have to say, although in a two-day course he can maybe provide the guts of that, and it's going to take some further mentoring and follow-up, That sort of ability to look at different time frames, select some key indicators that are right for that, you know, corporation, or in the case of individual investors, that individual, and understand how the trend in crude oil is a fundamental. It's not just the price moving on a board for the stock markets and so forth. That really is the fully rounded picture the institutions constantly monitor and take advantage of, and it's good insight for the individual to develop in their own right.
Well, you know, you mentioned, and we've got about 60 seconds till we take a break again, Alan, but one of the things you mentioned leads into the next question I have for you, which is essentially, you know, we get a lot of people into our workshops and our classes, and, you know, one of the big concerns of them is being able to compete with some of the big money guys, the institutional guys, and they have a lot of advantages versus them. And I want to explore that with you when we come back from the break. You are listening to Michael Young, Alan Rohrbach, and Craig Weil. This is Traders Talk Live. This is WIND AM 560 in Chicago.
And now, let's get back to the show that will teach you how to succeed in today's turbulent financial markets. Traders Talk Live. Here to do that for you is your host, Craig Weil.
Thank you. We are back on Traders Talk Live this morning. We're visiting with Alan Rohrbach. And Alan, when we left you, you led me into an issue that we deal with a lot at Online Trading Academy. And people come to us and they have the belief that they can't compete against institutions and professionals. But we tell them that the institutional money managers certainly have some advantages, but have a whole host of issues to deal with that actually put them at a disadvantage to us as individual traders and investors. And you brushed upon that briefly, but can you articulate or elaborate that point for our audience, what some of those issues are right now, and give them a little bit of encouragement today?
Well, of course, one of the reasons they feel they're at a disadvantage to the large institutions is the sheer depth of the portfolio and financing of the portfolio that is so well margined at the large institutions. And yet that does create the problem of ROI. In other words, handling such large amounts of money, those institutions have to have the money always at work. They have to finesse these huge portfolios. And that requires, as we discussed just a little while ago, an evolutionary view of the trends. You know, where was the last turn in a major economic cycle that is now reflecting in a sustained move in the stock markets, and yet how the short-term indications unfold within that broader trend, so they can help, you know, finesse the portfolio, as I said. Finesse is a key word. When does, in other words, as an example, we might revisit, when you get into not a condition like we're in now, but a major upturn out of a bottom like we had in '03 in the early '03 in the stock markets, how do you know when the market might be stalling for a while, but you look for the earmarks of when that stalling phase is done and the market's going to get more aggressively bullish again? And it's balancing shorter-term indications out against the broader trend. And the institutions are very good at that. And if I had to say one thing about how the institutions really excel, it's because they are taking this global view, and they have good information on all of the different things that are going to impact the market from different countries and different major trading centers. And you know, that's how they thrive.
Right, but when they get trapped, they get trapped, and that's where we thrive.
Well, and that is exactly right. That's where you ask, well, how can the individual investor who's, you know, either maybe looking to invest a bit longer term or wants to trade on a shorter term basis, develop an edge in light of that. Number one, those big portfolios need to average in and out of their positions. The agility that a individual investor has is not available to them. They can't pick one price and get into their whole position of, you know, three contracts of this or one contract of that. So by averaging in, they have bigger positions on. When they're right, they tend to sit for the longer-term trend and make more money on individual views. When they're wrong, they can't get out of it all at once either, and they have to work their way out. So it's bigger profits but bigger losses when they're wrong. So agility is a key advantage of the individual investor. And there is also a tremendous ability for the individual investor to expand the quality information resources that they have. There are a lot of online resources where people can get global reporting calendars. Sometimes you want to look at more than one, often as many as three or four, to make sure you're seeing everything. I pull down about eight or nine of them myself every weekend to make sure what some folks miss, I get from other resources. And one of the big keys is this is available. This is public domain information. And for instance, well, we're taping ahead of time, but let's say 2 weeks ago, not what will be this past week from Saturday morning, you had a situation where the long-term interest rate instruments took a two-point swing to the downside. That all came out of inflation figures and the quarterly inflation report from the Bank of England. Well, if you didn't understand that there were UK inflation numbers and there was going to be anticipation of a rather hawkish inflation report from the Bank of England Monday, Tuesday of 2 weeks ago, you didn't have any idea why interest rate instruments were under such pressure. But that information's out there and available for the people who want to source it themselves or who want to look for a quality information, consolidated information source.
Well, certainly there is a wealth of information out there that we can use to form our own trading plans, and we talk about that all the time. And obviously, you get into some very sophisticated analysis in your job. We try to keep it a little bit simpler, but we are getting a kick out of hearing you drill down into some of the challenges that you have. We're going to rejoin you in just a few seconds, Alan. Before we let you go today, I want to get a couple of your current market opinions for our audience. And we are Michael Young, Alan Rohrbach, Craig Weil, Traders Talk Live, AM 560, WIND Chicago.
And now, let's get back to the show that will teach you how to succeed in today's turbulent financial markets. Traders Talk Live. Here to do that for you is your host, Craig Weil.
All right, start me up this morning. We're going to get you started in the financial arena. You are listening to Michael Young, Alan Rohrbach, and I'm Craig Weil, Traders Talk Live this morning. And Alan, before we let you go, I can't do that before I put your feet to the fire a little bit. And we've had some pretty crazy markets this year. And in the equity market, especially at the moment, seems to be a lot of discussion that's kind of muddying the waters for the long-term picture for most people. There's a camp out there, as you're well aware, that says the worst may be over and the credit issues are behind us. And they advocate kind of a all systems go strategy right now. I don't really buy that, but if you believe that, you've also got to believe that the Fed may soon turn its attention to inflation, which is rearing its ugly head in the way of our energy and food prices these days, and perhaps the end of their rate cutting is over, and may start to raise rates at the end of the summer. Now, can the stock market mount any kind of advance from here, given a scenario where the rates may be rising? And what do you see for both the equity and the credit markets right at the moment?
Well, that's an excellent question, especially in terms of the background you used to phrase it. And the reason is so many people feel that the equity markets are going up because of the interest rates being lowered. But even Mr. Bernanke, Mr. Paulson, all of them said, look, the Fed can only accomplish so much with that. This is really still about the what you opened the show with, the consideration of whether the housing market itself, the securities that are based on the housing market, and the housing's effect on the consumer, if the worst is really over. And, you know, in other words, is the stock market looking across the valley and actually going to head higher from here because it doesn't care about some limited amount of further bad news, or is it going to start to reflect worse news to come in spite of some hopeful signs in the last couple of months? And my answer is twofold. One, that there's a funny thing that happens technically after the initial phase of bear markets, and they often form some reasonably major-looking bottoms that are premature. And right now, the bottom pattern in the Dow out of January and the relative retest in March broke up through 12,768, and it has an objective of 13,900. So indeed, Craig, if you think the market's back to being a real bull, you've got a big upside signal. The only problem is the fundamental situation starts to deteriorate if it fails back below progressively 12,700, and especially the more prominent technical support around 12,500. It's going to say that bottom is not performing now that it's been out on an up breakout for a month since mid-April, and that starts to present a real problem for whether we've bottomed at all. So it's a big decision, and it's all about, maybe 13,100 that we tested after the last employment report on the upside, and 12.7 and 12.5 on the downside. And it's so confusing, in fact, this is where I throw my hands up and say, I'm going to let the technicals tell me. I'm not that smart.
Alan, quick question. On Monday of this week, we had a pretty significant one-day reversal in the NASDAQ, a new recovery high and closed lower on the day, and, you know, followed to today already by a somewhat 30-point decline. How much stock do you put in action like that?
Well, I put the stock in it that one-day reversals are worth about the time it took to create them.
Mm-hmm.
And what they give me, and I'm going to say something right now that's kind of radical, technical analysis, or I should say no one technical indication, will tell you definitively which way the market's going to go. That might sound like an odd statement from someone who makes a substantial living off of providing people with a lot of technical projections, but one-day reversal in the NASDAQ, and I'm working now from the June of 08 NASDAQ 100 future, was from about the 2025 level and has a tolerance to about the 2035 level and has a tolerance to 2040. As long as that holds up, it might, on any retest, it might be a real top, but this is the counterpoint. This is why this is such a great question. Unless I see it break a relatively important recent low, such as the early May pullback at 1951, I'm always wondering if the trend's going to evolve to reinforce the topping action. So you're always looking as a seasoned analyst and trader at both sides of the coin. I think I have a turn. That's from a top. Now, how do I know it's following through by breaking further support?
Right. And a good thing is a lot of these tops and bottoms, they do give you another chance on a retest. So
they do indeed.
Investors should not worry about missing things like that.
Never.
All right. Well, Alan, we certainly have learned a lot from you this morning. And again, I thank you for stopping by and sharing with us some of your market insights and your business itself. And certainly invite you to come back to the show. Will you do that for us in the future?
Well, I would very much like to do that. It's a pleasure being on today, and I hope it turns out to be a great weekend for you out there. Do me a favor and tap in a couple birdies for me, would you?
He's going to find a lot of my balls from last weekend.
Alan, I don't know when the last time I had a tap-in birdie, but if I find one, I will certainly attribute it to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Alan.
Good evening, gentlemen. Good day.
All right. That was Alan Rohrbach of Rohr International. Michael, that was great. And we will return for our closing segment after a few messages. You are listening to Michael Young, Craig Weil, Traders Talk Live, AM 560 WIND Chicago.